Render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Render, that is, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's. And render to God, that is, give back to God what belongs to God. This is one of the most misused and abused passages in the Bible. But before then, just a brief reflection on the first reading from the book of Tobit. It is good also that you bear in mind that the book of Tobit, or books of Tobit, are among those you may not find in some versions of the Bible that you carry around. If you are a Catholic and you want to buy a Bible, ask questions and make sure it is a complete version of the Bible, a Catholic edition. The story of Tobit is a moving one. But two things I want us to bear in mind from the passage of the first reading is that being good does not prevent you from suffering evil. One of the greatest temptations of modern Christianity in Nigeria is to make you believe that once you are doing God's will, once you have given your life to Christ, you will not have any more problems. It is a lie. Tobit was a good man. And he seemed to have got only evil things in return for his goodness. But even in his goodness, this time he was dead wrong. His wife, because he was blind, had to take care of him, to work extra. What many couples, the problems they have, husband and wife, just you find one of them leaving the entire family problem, all the family problems, to the other person. It can be either way, especially in times of difficulty. But this woman worked extra, and one can notice that she was devoted and thorough in her work to the point that this particular incident, she was paid fully and given a gift. And Tobit, in his condition of disability, had the spirit, I don't know what to call that spirit, of suspecting her of having collected what was stolen. And you were not there. But he asked the question, I hope it wasn't stolen. And the woman said, no, look at what happened. No, return it. Now wait a minute. Now we have to be careful when we think we are righteous. Because Tobit may have been guilty of two possible things. Either a scrupulous conscience, a conscience that sees sin even in a smile. Some think that the only way to go to heaven is by frowning and being sad. Well, I want to tell you, we'll be singing in heaven. There's no place for sad people in heaven. So you better start now to practice how to be happy by doing the right things. That type of conscience, that was one. And then also judging. And finally, the risk of self-righteousness. Always wanting to prove that you are so good. That was a problem. But the one that hurt the woman most was that there were trust issues. She gave you an explanation. Why not believe her? When there is no trust, no marriage will work.
And the woman was wrong. The woman had shown by her reaction that she was not happy. And she started to mock Toby because of his condition. Santa, Mr. Holy Man, Holy Nweje. Where is your holiness, your righteousness? See your condition.
Now, that shows immediately the state of her mind.
Because as one spiritual writer was telling us in the meditation during the prayer this morning, he says that provocation is no excuse for evil words. Provocation is no excuse for angry reaction. Because if those words were not in your heart, no amount of provocation will bring them out. A rotten fruit may be covered by a beautiful skin, but once you crush it, you squeeze it, the rottenness comes out. It is in the moment of trial that you know the disposition of a person's heart. She was pushed to the wall, and what she had in her heart came out. Purify your hearts. About give back to Caesar what is Caesar's and give back to God what is God's, I'll tell you a short story and draw a conclusion. Caesar was not just one person. The first of the famous Caesars was Gaius Julius Caesar, who had died even before Jesus was born. Augustus, who announced the census, was also dead. It was probably Tiberius who was there when Jesus died. But whichever Caesar was there at that particular time, Caesar had become not just a surname, but also a title of authority of the emperor. But because Julius Caesar was a dictator, a very intelligent man, an able orator, an astute planner and leader, he was able to organize the economy of the state. What did he do? You have your Department of Economics here, so I will allow you to go for some refresher course with them about the history of money. But at some point in the history of money as a unit of exchange, when trade by barter had been substituted by use of animals, especially cows, cattle, and sheep, the volume of trade also made it impossible to move cattle. And they started using copper. And some of the expressions we use in English now, like expend, evaluate, those were all related to the giving value to copper and measuring out copper. But even further, under Caesar, the copper coin eventually, the original copper coin was bearing the image of an animal printed on it. And the general name for the animal was Pecus. And that is why the name for money in Latin is pecunia. Because this piece of copper was meant to be an equivalent of a sheep or of cattle. So you gave me this, I gave you the equivalent of a sheep, of any other animal that we agreed on. But devaluation and corruption was in the human mind even then. So people would mix cheaper metals with copper and print those coins. Now, Caesar stepped in. And on every coin, that copper coin that was printed in his king, his empire, he placed his image as a symbol of authority and value. And by then, because he was so powerful, he was even regarded as a god. Now, you see this copper coin? Look, the guarantee behind it is the authority of Caesar. Don't joke with it. It had both economic value and religious meaning. One, it offered economic stability and also stability to the society. But it also reminded the Jews that they were under the rule of a foreign power who regarded himself as a god. When the Herodians and the Pharisees agreed to bring this problem to Jesus, they brought a political problem with religious implication to him. The Pharisees were Orthodox Jews who never accepted the authority of Caesar. When Jesus entered Jerusalem, people shouted, "Hosanna, our Messiah has come," which also implied, "We will now stop paying taxes to Caesar." And after that entry and all the things he did in the temple, these problems and confrontations began. These two groups came. The Pharisees, he just needed to have said yes. Because in some translations, they say yes or no. They wanted a yes or no answer. He just needed to have said yes. And they would tell the others, "Look at this man who claims to be the Son of God and the Messiah. Is subjecting all of us to the authority of this pagan ruler." And if he said no, the Herodians would immediately report to the ruler, the governor, that a rebel was in town. Tell them, "Give me the coin, you hypocrites." Now, the Holy Father Pope Francis constantly reminds us that there is no sin so great that God does not forgive, provided we ask him for pardon. And Jesus forgave all forms of sins, those that were regarded as the worst in his time: prostitution, adultery, murder. The first person who entered paradise was a murderer. But he had no patience for hypocrites, because they were not honest. I did say, with regard to the question they asked him about John the Baptist as his authority, and he asked them about John the Baptist and his authority. A person who asks questions not in order to be enlightened or informed, but only to cause confusion and to put you in trouble, does not deserve an answer. "You hypocrites, give me this. Whose image is this?" They say, "Caesar." "Oh, Caesar is the guarantor of your economic stability. He's the guarantor of your social stability. And we are questioning whether you should be loyal to him in the civic circle. You must return civic loyalty to Caesar for the stability he provides. Return to Caesar what is Caesar's. But give back to God what is God's." That is the message. And what is God's? Just as that coin has worth and value, and there is an, because of image of Caesar it bears, that gives it a guarantee, so also you, Pharisees, Herodians, Caesar, every one of you bears the image of God. Give back your life to God. You belong to him. And you will have no difficulty in being loyal to Caesar. But He was also telling them, Caesar has to be given back to God, because even Caesar is not God, he belongs to God. Any government that tries to run its course without reference to God is bound to collapse. Check the history. The clash, so to speak, between young Christianity, young church, and the most powerful empire in the world then, the Roman Empire, without firing a shot, without ever bearing a sword, they fought the sword with a word and responded with love for hatred. Caesar clashed with Jesus, and Caesar lost. Christ won. Because Christ is God. In addition, you have to give civic respect or responsibility back to the state because you need it. But you also give to Caesar things he needs from God. Truth. Caesar has no power over truth. Love. Caesar has no control over love. Humility. Caesar does not know what it means. These are virtues, values of the gospel, values of Christ that you as a believer must bring to Caesar, bring to the state, bring to the civic authorities. And at the end, give Caesar back to God because he belongs to God. There are things we can't give to Caesar. Loyalty to some degree. Respect, yes. But absolute loyalty, never. And by that, I mean every level of Caesarship, if there is anything like that. Because, of course, you know, even in the university level, student communities and staff circles, loyalties in certain circles, call them cults, call them sodalities, call them associations. Such loyalties sometimes come before loyalty to God for in the life of some people. Now, if you take what is God's absolute loyalty and give it to any level of the Caesars, you are in error. So not only that you give your life back to God, surrender your life to God because you bear his image, make also an additional effort to bring back Caesar to God because he belongs to him.